My name is Meade Treadwell. I'm Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, and today we are holding a hearing on Ballot Measure 2, which is an act to regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana. Let me just say about this process from the start. We are trying to run these hearings around the state. This is the third hearing we will have done on this issue of eight required by law. And we're doing these hearings around the state as if they were a legislative hearing, one, to tease out questions and answers about how the measure will work, two, to let people argue for or against the initiative, as also happens in a legislative hearing, but to get it all on the record so that if there are questions later on about intent, if the measure passes and people are saying, well, did you mean X or Y, we try to have that on the hearing. So thank you all for your participation. And what we're going to do in a fairly simple agenda item right now is, go to the next slide there, I will present a sectional analysis and a cost estimate of the bill. Then we will invite Steve forward to present for the pro side, for the sponsors of the bill. Christina Wolston is on the line. To speak against the bill, and then we will open up to public testimony. And we also have on the line with us several experts or people who can answer questions from the agencies about the bill and how it may work. We have Major Dennis Casanovas from the Alaska State Troopers. We have April Wilkerson from the Department of Corrections, Brandon Spanos from the Department of Revenue, Ward Hurlburt, who's Chief Medical Officer of the Department of Health and Social Services, and Kim Stryker, who's in Food Safety Sanitation at DEC, Michaela Fowler and Jean Mungle at the Department of Commerce here. So I'd like to thank all of you for participating in the hearing today, and let me just move forward with a little bit of a summary of the proposed bill, and then we'll go into a sectional analysis of the bill. This bill would tax and regulate the production, sale, and use of marijuana in Alaska. It would make use of marijuana legal for persons 21 or older, allowing them to possess, display, or use, display, purchase, or transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana. It would impose various restrictions on personal cultivation, personal use, and operation of a marijuana-related facility, and it would allow the legislature to create a marijuana control board in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It imposes an excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana and provides for the enforcement and administration of that tax. We turn now to a sectional analysis. Section 1 of the bill adds a new chapter, Alaska Statute 17.38 on regulation of marijuana, to the Alaska statutes. And the statute would provide that the production and sale of marijuana should be regulated and taxed such that businesses could sell marijuana and that such sales should be conducted in a manner that protects consumers and promotes public health and safety. The statute would limit the use, sale, growth, and transport of marijuana to individuals who are 21 years of age or older and imposes penalties for public consumption. And the statute would allow for the creation of a marijuana control board while still allowing for local government to make decisions regarding its use and regulation. Section 2 adds a new chapter, Alaska Statutes 43.61, which imposes an excise tax on marijuana to the Alaska statutes. And this statute would impose a $50 per ounce excise tax on the sale or transfer of marijuana from a marijuana cultivation facility or producer to a retail marijuana store distributor or marijuana product manufacturing facility, and the producer would be responsible for paying the tax. Monthly tax statements would be required by the Department of Revenue from each marijuana cultivation facility, and if these taxes were not paid, the facility would be subject to civil penalties under Alaska Statutes 43.05.220. A little bit about how a citizen initiative works. If a majority of votes favor adoption, the Lieutenant Governor certifies the election returns, and an initiated law becomes effective 90 days after certification. Now, a law like this is not subject to a governor's veto, and it may not be repealed by the legislature within 2 years of its effective date, according to the Alaska Constitution, Article 11. And although the legislature may amend an initiative during any time after it's enacted, any amendments made during the first 2 years may not operate to effectively repeal the initiative by amendment or to vitiate the intent. And there's a number of legal cases that have helped guide that issue there. On a table here by the door and also online, either at the online Alaska Online Public Notice System or also reach through the Lieutenant Governor's website, we have a cost estimate of the bill prepared by the Office of Management and Budget that looks at the costs on this. And there's been some publicity about this lately, so let me try to make it very clear. We asked in the cost estimate, when we compile cost estimates for legislation, we do not include speculative numbers, and it's very hard to estimate what the tax revenue would be from marijuana. It's $50 an ounce. We've got 734,000 people in the state. We've got close to 1 million tourists. It's hard to tell how much people might buy or might not buy. It's also virtually impossible to tell how much would be sold on the legal market versus on the black market. In Colorado's experience, they've seen quite a bit being sold tax-free on the black market still. And so we figured that it was not appropriate to do a speculative estimate. And we had some numbers about how much may be used today by different people and so forth, but that's basically up to the proponents and the opponents to speak to. So it was not any sort of political decision not to give a cost estimate. We just, as a matter of policy from the Department of Law, have not done that for many years and on this and many other measures. But we have estimated what we believe our hard costs would be to implement the law. The Department of Revenue estimates it would need to create at least 3 new positions to oversee the new excise tax, and the estimated recurring annual costs of that are $300,000. The Department of Revenue estimates that it would need a one-time expense of $500,000 for configurations to their tax revenue management systems, and so that startup cost would be about $350,000 to $500,000. So the total cost estimate for the first year would be $650,000 to $800,000 at the Department of Revenue. At the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, which has the ABC board under its jurisdiction, if the initiative passes, the responsibility for controlling marijuana will lie with the ABC board, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, until or unless the Marijuana Control Board is established by the legislature within DCCED. And as was done with Colorado, the department recommends the creation of a task force to identify legal policy and procedural issues that need to be resolved. And from creating a database to purchasing vehicles, the estimated cost to create a task force is $1.563,960 for the first year and $1.4 million for the second year. The total estimate that the Department of Commerce sent forward for the first year, therefore, is $1.5 million. A cost estimate of the bill and other departments is detailed in the cost estimate that's available at the table. The Department of Health and Social Services estimated a cost of from $0 to $2.9 million based on services it may need to provide. The Department of Public Safety discussing some of the requirements to keep marijuana grown in Alaska from being exported from the state, and also policing the legal versus illegal sale of marijuana, expects a cost estimate of $1.4 million. And I should say that we have not included in that estimate any cost to localities or municipalities for training in public safety there. The Department of Environmental Conservation, which polices food safety in the state, estimates between $0 and $136,900. And the University of Alaska, which has a number of federal requirements to comply with in regarding marijuana use in its on its campuses and so forth, had an indeterminate number, but detailed some of the costs that they might have to deal with in the cost estimate. I should say also the Lieutenant Governor's office and the Division of Elections estimated a total of $80,257, most of which is being spent now to put the measure on the ballot, to include it in the voter information pamphlet, and to run these hearings around the state. So that is the cost estimate on the measure. Let me go back now to the agenda and invite Steve. Steve, I didn't get your last name. Steve Handy from the pro side to come up. And April, why don't you come sit here, and we'll bring Steve's presentation up and go from there. Steve, if you could begin by introducing yourself and
certainly
before then, I don't know how we go to full screen there.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Steve Handy. I live in Juneau, Alaska, and I'm a full-time student of law and governance at the University of Alaska Southeast. And I'm here today as a volunteer representing the campaign to regulate marijuana. I'll be talking to you today about Ballot Measure 2. In summary, Ballot Measure 2 hopes to create a more sensible approach to marijuana and makes the private use, possession, and home growing of marijuana legal for adults 21 years or older. The initiative actively manages the marijuana industry that already exists in Alaska and establishes a system in which marijuana is regulated and taxed similar to alcohol. Before we get further into the initiative itself, I want to take a moment to introduce you to the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. It is a grassroots organization made up of hundreds of volunteers across the state, many of which have been involved with this issue for years, and I am one of them. This initiative is on the ballot because over 45,000 Alaskans signed the qualifying petition. There were signature gatherers all over the state, in both urban and rural Alaska, and the response was overwhelmingly positive. Alaskans from Juneau to Nome and everywhere in between recognize that marijuana prohibition has failed. Ballot Measure 2 offers Alaskans the opportunity to enact a more sensible approach to marijuana. The measure will allow law enforcement to direct resources away from marijuana prohibition and towards violent and otherwise harmful crimes. It will reduce youth access to marijuana and replace the underground market with a system in which marijuana is regulated and taxed similarly to alcohol. It will bolster the state's economy with significant new tax revenue and job creation. It will also stop the arrest and prosecution of adults who are simply choosing to use a substance that is objectively far less harmful than alcohol to the consumer and the broader community. We know that marijuana is already here. We have the highest rates of use in the country, with over 100,000 Alaskans currently using marijuana. So the question you will be deciding in November is not whether marijuana should be in the state, but rather how the existing industry should be managed. Ballot Measure 2 sets up a framework, and after the initiative passes, a 9-month rulemaking period will begin. During the rulemaking period, strict regulations will be enacted, such as restrictions on advertising, banning of so-called child-friendly edibles, and other strict regulations to ensure that the sale of marijuana is tightly controlled. It is important to note that the initiative actually requires that these steps are taken. Regulations will be enacted to ensure that marijuana is not sold to minors. This means strict rules such as the banning of child-friendly edibles, such as gummy bears and lollipops. Labeling requirements will ensure quality control so consumers know what they are purchasing. Strict restrictions on advertising can and will be put into place. Anyone who tells you otherwise has either not read the initiative or is trying to deliberately mislead. Finally, the initiative provides communities with the greatest level of local control allowed by state law. It would be unconstitutional to allow communities to ban the possession of marijuana, but the initiative gives Alaskan communities the opportunity to ban the purchase and sale of marijuana. Those communities who decide to exercise their local option will have a situation fundamentally no different than what we have today. The basis for the No campaign is that marijuana is too harmful to regulate and allow adults to use. There is no more important discussion to have than whether this is true. Most Alaskans, most Americans, and presumably even the Big Mistake campaign agree that alcohol should be regulated and legal for adults. Our goal is to treat marijuana like alcohol, so the relative safety of marijuana compared to alcohol is at the crux of this entire discussion. The facts are that marijuana is safer than alcohol, both to the individual and to the society. This is supported by legitimate scientific research and just plain common sense. Polls show that nearly 75% of Americans agree. If we recognize that marijuana is far less harmful than alcohol, then there is no reason why we cannot or should not regulate it in a similar way. Marijuana is less toxic by any measure, and its long-term use is not associated with the many serious chronic medical conditions that affect alcohol users. And unlike alcohol, marijuana does not lead to overdose deaths. It does not contribute to violence, sexual assault, or domestic abuse, fights, and injuries, which are a major problem in Juneau and across the state. So, in considering the benefits of passing ballot measure 2, one of the first and most obvious benefits of passing the initiative is that it would actually lead to a decrease in alcohol consumption. Economists have studied this question and found that legalizing marijuana could curb drinking and its associated social costs. We know that the health costs associated with consuming alcohol are 8 times greater than with marijuana, and the health costs associated with tobacco consumption are 40% greater than with marijuana. So, the extent to which marijuana can serve as a substitute for both of these substances is a huge public health benefit for Alaska. One of the most important benefits of taxation regulation is that it would make it harder for teens to access marijuana. Again, marijuana is already here in Alaska, and is currently easier for teens to obtain than alcohol or tobacco. So by regulating it, we will require that sales are conducted by responsible businesses who require proof of ID and have an incentive to make sure that they are not selling to minors. What we have seen out of Colorado, which voted to tax and regulate marijuana in 2012, is that teen use has actually decreased, according to the Colorado Department of Public Health. And there has not been a single case of dispensaries selling to underage consumers. So when you hear the opposition group tell you that teen use will increase after the initiative passes in Alaska, we know that facts do not back up those claims. Along with the reduction in alcohol consumption and teen use, we also know that taxing and regulating marijuana will create a new revenue for the state. Colorado and Washington expect to collect hundreds of millions in tax revenue over the next few years. This money in Alaska is currently benefiting criminals in the underground market, when it should be spent on important public needs such as infrastructure, education, drug prevention, and awareness programs. Additionally, we know that the state is spending between $8 million and $14 million per year enforcing marijuana possession laws. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, whatever it costs to implement the law and the regulatory structure will be more than covered by the money we will save no longer having to enforce failed policies of prohibition. And just importantly, taxing and regulating marijuana will create jobs for Alaskans. Colorado's marijuana industry currently supports approximately 10,000 jobs. From a public safety perspective, most Alaskans recognize that our law enforcement officials should be focusing on fighting violent crime, not arresting adults in the state simply for using a substance that is far safer than alcohol. Yet, according to a former Chief Justice of Alaska Supreme Court, the threat of state prosecution for simple marijuana is real and substantial. The American Civil Liberties Union reports that an Alaskan is arrested for marijuana possession every 4.32 hours every day, or in the state. And of all the drug arrests in Alaska, 81% are for marijuana possession, which is the highest rate in the country. We are criminalizing otherwise law-abiding citizens and wasting precious law enforcement resources, which could be spent much more productively. Finally, passing ballot measure 2 will increase access to medical marijuana for patients who really need it, as reported here by KTUU Channel 2. Medical marijuana is technically legal in Alaska, but there is no way for patients to access their medicine safely. We hear stories every day from people who have been prescribed marijuana to treat various ailments, but have to go to dangerous black market to obtain it. In closing, I want to issue a word of warning and caution in analyzing the arguments that will be presented by the prohibitionist group here today and over the course of this campaign. There is an outrageous stigma associated with the use of marijuana. The history of prohibition in this country is that the forces who support it will stop at nothing to maintain the government's policy of arresting and prosecuting adults for simply using a substance which is safer than alcohol. In 1937, when marijuana was first made illegal, it was done so primarily due to ignorance and racism. The chief of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics justified marijuana prohibition by saying things like, marijuana leads to pacifism and communist brainwashing. The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effects on the degenerate races. And you smoke a joint and you are likely to kill your brother. Prohibitionists in modern times, such as the DEA chief in Washington, D.C., hold the indefensible position that marijuana is equally as harmful as heroin, methamphetamine, and crack. And the prohibitionist group in Alaska, who you will hear from today, has been taken to task by the press for misleading the public over the course of this campaign. Our policy should be based on science and fact, not on fear-mongering and misinformation. It is a fact that marijuana is safer than alcohol, and it would be irrational to continue our current policies, which have needlessly criminalized thousands of Alaskans, empowered the criminal underground, foregone millions of dollars in tax revenue and good-paying jobs for Alaskans, and prevented medical marijuana patients from accessing their medicine safely and without fear of prosecution. I hope you will stand with me and thousands of other Alaskans in November by voting yes on ballot measure 2.
Thank you. Steve, I'm going to invite you to take a chair up here because during the hearing you may be asked questions. Christina, are you online?
I am. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we're trying to bring up your PowerPoint now. I apologize. The Alaska flight from Anchorage this morning landed about 20 minutes before the hearing, and so we're just getting a few, and I had the computer with me from our last hearing in Burroughs, so we're just getting some of these things queued up.
No problem. I had tried to get to Juneau this morning as well to be there, so I apologize that I could not. So I'm calling in from Anchorage.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us. We now have your PowerPoint up, and if you can introduce yourself and your background and your organization, and
yes,
move ahead with your presentation.
Okay, thank you. And I'm just going to let you know to advance the slides. It's not Cameron, so thank you to whoever is running the slideshow today.
Yeah, it's April Shoemaker.
Oh, okay. Thanks, April. So if you could go to slide two, April. My name is Christina Wolfson. I'm the volunteer spokesperson for the Big Marijuana, Big Mistake, Vote No on 2 campaign. And I represent the organizations and more that you see on the screen that are opposing ballot measure 2 because we have significant concerns and questions about what this would do to our state, the impact to our businesses, our communities, organizations like the Alaska Conference of Mayors, the Alaska Chamber, and the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, and many more. There are many concerns, and if you could go to slide three, one of the biggest concerns is what was intentionally put in the bill. And in the bill, in the ballot measure, is the definition of marijuana, and it includes every compound, manufacturer, salt derivative mixture, including marijuana concentrates. It also includes marijuana accessories, meaning any equipment, ingesting, inhaling, or otherwise introducing marijuana into your body, so in any fashion. And finally, marijuana products means concentrated marijuana products that are comprised of marijuana and other ingredients that are intended for use or consumption, but not limited to edible products. And what do I mean by edible products and concentrates? If you go to slide four, this is a picture of what marijuana concentrates look like. They are incredibly toxic, and they are almost 100% pure THC, and they would be completely legal in the state of Alaska. And an ounce of concentrate is much, much different than an ounce of green leafy marijuana. But by definition of marijuana in this ballot measure, this would be legal, and an ounce would be able to be sold in pot shops in Alaska. If you go to the next slide, slide five, this is just an example of other substances that would be included in the concentrates that would be legal. So butane hash oil concentrates are used by using butane fuel and grain alcohol to cook down a mixture that actually needs to have to use a blowtorch to activate. So much different than what is being sold in terms of the definition of marijuana. Slide six is a vape pen. The marijuana, this is a commercial industry, and a commercial industry, a retail industry, industrialized industry, their objective is to get users to use more and to bring in new users. And one of the ways that they're doing this is making it easier to do it surreptitiously or on the sly. This is a vape pen. Vape pens now come in forms like highlighters, and they've seen that high school students that they surveyed tried vape pens in double amounts from just one from year 2011 to 2012, nearly 2 million students. So these are students also, many of them, who have never smoked an actual cigarette, but they're experimenting with vaporizers. If you go to slide seven, this is a slide that shows photos of marijuana edibles filled with concentrates that are packaged in ways to be attractive to children. And these would be legal in Alaska. They're protected, and these products are legal in Colorado, and they have not been able to restrict or control the packaging or the products that are sold. These are incredibly confusing to children. They look just like the treats that they would get, that are not good for them, but that are not laced with concentrates. And in fact, the top of the screen where it shows the Kit Kat bar, that manufacturer has been sued by Hershey's because it is so similarly packaged to an actual Hershey bar. Slide eight, this is a marijuana display in one of the shops in Colorado. The clear packaging shows candy. It doesn't show that this is bad for you. And those also, the packaging has not been controlled in Colorado. It has not been restricted. Slide nine, these are pictures of marijuana advertising. As a retail industry, advertising is the game. And you need to show people your product, and you want them to buy more. And you offer specials, and you send out ValPak coupons. And then the top right-hand side is a full-page Denver Post advertisement. Slide 10, the bottom left-hand corner shows a Google search of the Denver pot stores. And there are now more pot shops than alcohol stores and pharmacies in Denver. Slide 11 shows a sign, and this has been seen on Anchorage city buses as well, that says that marijuana is the safe option. And this is in front of our kids at the Alaska State Fair. Thousands of kids walk by this sign every day at the fair, and they see it in downtown Anchorage. I think it is irresponsible. It's also really unfortunate and misleading to tell our kids that this is the safe option. Slide 12, it is incredible that the peer-reviewed, substantially, you know, globally respected medical institutions are just being cast aside when they look at the impact that marijuana use has on brain structure and memory. Many institutions, the New England Journal of Medicine, Northwestern University, Harvard Medical Institute, all of these show that marijuana use is linked to brain abnormalities, particularly in adolescents. And I look forward to hearing and asking some questions of our medical experts that are on the call today to talk more about this. But the fact is, and more studies have just come out, the study by Lancet, published in The Lancet, that shows that teens who smoke cannabis daily and even regular use, their level of the rate of suicide increases up to 7 times. And in Alaska, that is a very sad statistic that we have in our very high rates of suicide, particularly in our rural communities, where I'm from a rural community. Slide 13, workplace productivity. Alaska's compensation costs are already the highest in the nation. And when you look at the fact that there's no appropriate standards and testing available for marijuana, there's no way to ensure workforce safety, readiness, or productivity. And workers who test positive for marijuana have 55% more industrial accidents, 85% more injuries, and a 75% increase in absenteeism. This is important because use will go up if this is commercialized and industrialized in Alaska. It has happened in Colorado. It will happen here. It is just a fact of nature. The New England Journal of Medicine says that we cannot attribute just the pharmacological effect of a substance on our society. We need to also recognize that it is its prevalence, its availability, and its accessibility. And when we look at the impact to our state and to a society, for every tax dollar you bring in, I mean, I don't understand why we are trying to model this after alcohol or tobacco, because for every tax dollar you bring in for tobacco or alcohol, you spend $10 in lost productivity, cost to families, harm to youth, and increased health care costs. If you go to slide 14, this is, this is significantly worrisome for me. The University of Michigan did a recent study about marijuana perception. And when you legalize it, kids equate legal with safe, and the perceived risk goes down. And so use goes up, the perception of risk goes down, and this is what would happen in Alaska if this were legalized. If you skip to slide, the Why Alaska, Why Now slide, the Marijuana Policy Project is funding nearly 100% of the campaign funds for this measure. They helped write the bill. They helped write the measure that was passed in Colorado, and we are part of their national strategy. They do not care about Alaska, and if you look on the next slide, not just any nonprofit, you can see Rob Campia, who is the executive director of the Marijuana Policy Project. He stated in August, "While most people don't care about Alaska, everyone seems to agree that we cannot afford to lose a statewide legalization vote just 2 years after the twin victories in Colorado and Washington. We absolutely must win in Alaska, lest reporters declare the legalization movement to be backsliding." And the next slide, it is backsliding. If Alaskans voted today, more Alaskans would vote no than they would vote yes, and it is because Alaskans are realizing what is in this ballot measure, and we're recognizing the unintended consequences that are happening in Colorado. Lieutenant Governor, how much time do I have left?
I think you got about a minute and a half.
Okay. A couple of myths. If you go to the slide, myth one, it will bring in huge tax revenue. Colorado has only seen $13 million, and when they were marketed about their ballot measure, they were told that it would bring in $100 million in annual revenue. Well, we know that's not the case, and Colorado has 7 times the population that Alaska does. And so I think $5 million, based upon the rate of Coloradans using it, you know, you look at the fact that 44% in urban areas are tax revenue dollars in Colorado, 90% in rural areas, and I think that what is being sold as a huge boon to Alaska's economy is just not true. If you could skip a couple slides to myth number two, eliminates the black market. Lieutenant Mark Compte of the Colorado Springs Police Department Vice and Narcotics Unit reported to the Associated Press that marijuana legalization has done nothing more than enhance the opportunity for the black market. And he said that if you can get it tax-free on the corner, you're going to get it on the tax corner. If you skip to the slide that says myth number four, Alaska does not have a marijuana incarceration problem, and the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police are opposing Ballot Measure 2 because they do know that this is in fact true. We do not have an incarceration problem. We are not breaking down into Alaskans' homes. We are not targeting Alaskans for minor marijuana possession. And the fact is, it is here, and people do use it, but we don't need a retail industry in order to address some of the other things that we might around marijuana in Alaska. This is not an Alaska measure. It's an outside measure. And I think if you look at the slide, Colorado is having serious issues, we need to look at the unintended consequences, not just the facts that science has shown us about what this will do to our society and increase in youth use. When you look at the fact that, if you go to the bottom line issue, homelessness is up in Colorado by 25%. Youth use is up. Black market has increased, and crime is up 6.7% in Denver. Even the governor of Colorado says, wait, learn from us, watch our petri dish. And as we see in Colorado, the dream is unraveling, and we have a lot to learn, and there's a lot of concern. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Christina, I've got several questions, actually, of both the sponsors and your statement, which we'll bring up as we go along. I want to allow Alaskans to testify first, but just very quickly on one, did the governor of Colorado make that statement publicly? Is there a source for that statement?
Yes, I can send the newspaper article where the governor is quoted saying to wait and see.
Okay. Yeah. when you do provide presentations and backup, we do try to include them in the hearing record. And if there's information from the governor of another state, I'd like to receive that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Governor.
Yes, sir.
This is Chris Rempert with the campaign Regulate Marijuana. I'm going to be standing in for Steve, who gave the presentation, just so you're aware.
Great, Chris. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make a comment on the governor's quote that Christina was mentioning. Before he said what she mentioned, he actually did say that the sky isn't falling in Colorado and not much has changed. So I hope that the whole quote can be included when we get that source.
Great. You are very welcome to supply the quote as well. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Here in Juneau, who has signed up? Who is interested in providing testimony? Let me invite you up, April. Why don't you come back here and be timekeeper? We'll keep the computer there in case we need to refer to any of the slides, but introduce yourself, please, sir. And
thank you. I'm Dean Guanelli. I've lived in Juneau for 38 years. I'm not affiliated with any group. I was about to say I'm with the Criminal Division of the Attorney General's Office, where I worked for 30 years before retiring in 2006.
I've heard you testify many times, Dean. Thanks for being with us today.
Lieutenant Governor Treadwell, I hope that all voters take a careful look at the slogans that are put out in support of legalizing the retail sale of marijuana. Ballot Measure 2 is 8 pages long, single-spaced. No one should rely on one-liners to understand what it does. You have to look at the details. And you have to also realize and keep in mind what's happened in Colorado with a nearly identical law. To begin with, Ballot Measure 2 is much more than the slogan you hear about allowing adults to smoke a joint in private. If it passes, dozens of marijuana stores will spring up all over Alaska. We'll be flooded with advertising, as you saw in the presentation from the from Christina Woolston. This is exactly what happened in Colorado. You also hear that Ballot Measure 2 is about the freedom to choose. It's true, you'll be free to choose, and you'll be free to choose a lot more types of recreational drugs, like the marijuana concentrates. Christina Woolston had a photo of those concentrates that they've developed in Colorado. They have up to 90% THC, which is the active ingredient from marijuana. This is 10 times more powerful than the typical high-grade marijuana found in Alaska and much more dangerous. These concentrates, as you saw from the slideshow, are being put into cookies, candies, flavored soft drinks. They're heavily advertised, selling well in Colorado. And because it's such concentrated material, each of these products has typically several adult dosages. You have cookies with dosages enough to make get six adults high. You have soft drinks that have enough dosage to get 10 adults high. And it's sending adults and children as young as 2 years old to the hospital, to the hospital emergency rooms in record numbers. And recently, driving under the influence of THC and car accidents are skyrocketing in Colorado and in some surrounding states. Just recently in Colorado, two coroners ruled, on the death certificates that two deaths, one a homicide and one a suicide, were directly caused by the THC because of the high dosage, the paranoia that it inflicted on these individuals caused a homicide and a suicide. It's clever to say that we should regulate marijuana like alcohol, and this ballot initiative certainly does set up a regulatory scheme. The last six pages, again single spaced, set up a regulatory scheme, but devoted to one aim, and that is creating a marijuana industry in Alaska, protecting that industry and making it difficult for state officials to regulate it. And let me give you just one example. The next to the last page defines marijuana exactly as in Colorado, and it specifically includes the high THC concentrates. But this is different than the definition in current Alaska law. And there's only one reason to use the Colorado wording in an Alaska law, and that's because the state money behind this initiative wants to bring in the same marijuana industry to Alaska, along with any type of powerful medical or powerful marijuana product that they can devise in their labs, and they want to prevent state officials from doing anything about it, and that's why they use the Colorado definition. It's seductive to say that taxes will help do things like build new schools, for example, but the small amount of taxes that could be raised won't help treat the individuals who abuse THC or get sick from it, won't increase the number of police on our roadways, won't create new education systems for kids who have trouble with marijuana, much less build new schools. This is an important debate that can't be reduced to one-liners. Alaskans should have a serious conversation about marijuana, but ballot measure two is the wrong way to go about it. Recently, there was a Desert Storm veteran who wrote to the newspaper, both in Juneau and in Fairbanks, said that he couldn't get medical marijuana for his post-traumatic stress disorder. Most doctors believe that PTSD is actually prolonged by marijuana. It temporarily masks its effects, and it prevents veterans from getting well sooner. But if people with legitimate medical needs have a problem, let's fix that. This does much more. This brings in retail selling, advertising, and all of that just makes it, it encourages kids to use. It makes it easier for people with mental health issues to self-medicate, and it gets drivers stoned out of their minds on 90% THC products that they can buy right off the shelf.
You've gone over 3 minutes, but I am going to invite you to the experts that we said are online or to the proposers or the opponents. Or do you have any questions that you'd like to see answered on the record?
I don't have any questions, but I'd be happy to stay available to answer any.
It'd be a pleasure to have you do that. Thank you very much. There may be some questions about how the Department of Law traditionally would handle some of these issues. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who's here and is interested in testifying here in Juneau? Got a number of observers. Anyone online? I've got George Stewart. Oh, I'm sorry. Please come forward. George is hung up. Okay, great. Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. My name is Howard Scholl. I live here in Juneau, and I am here to speak for the bill. I smoke weed every day, and it's something I've done for all of my life, and I don't think it has a negative effect on me. And I think having open retail to be able to go out and buy weed without being scared of getting arrested, walking home with it, being pulled over by the police, and being thrown in jail for something so minor you know, with that, I think it should be legal. I have friends who are older who've gone through cancer and couldn't get it, so I'd help them. And again, technically I'm breaking the law by providing marijuana, but if it was legal, that wouldn't be an issue. Sorry, I'm not really good on public speaking.
No problem. Just be relaxed and take your, you know.
And to comment on the high concentrates, those are already here. I've ran into many people selling them, and right now it's easy for kids to have them. Most people I meet are kids that have them and bought it off the street. If you put it behind the counter, the people who control the stores, you know, the owners, are not going to sell it to these kids, or else, just like alcohol, they'll lose their license. And I think putting it behind the shelf makes it a lot less accessible for the kids. And, yeah, that's pretty much about it.
If I can I ask you a question?
Yes.
You've heard the proponents and the opponents this afternoon. Do you think the black market is going to go away if there's a $50 ounce per ounce tax on marijuana that you're using? Is it going to be cheaper for you to still buy it on the street, buy it however you get it today?
The black market will not go away completely. Like 100%, there will still be people selling whatever they grow. But with the stores, it'll probably be more expensive for me to go in and buy it from the store. I'm assuming, though, it'll be higher quality, you know, something nicer, as opposed to whatever you're getting on the street, which a lot of it's imported into the state through outside places. So the black market will go away, but this would also keep it, you know, keep the money in the state. You're not paying these drug dealers from Washington, from California. Money stays here.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for the experts on the online?
Not really, no. I was going to ask more about, you have both sides saying the amount of money spent by the state on arresting people for marijuana and all the law enforcement aspects. You have one side said, pro side said it was somewhere around $8 million, and then the anti side said there was, you know, we don't arrest that many people, that there's a disparity.
Mitch Casanovas, do you have any quibble with the statistics that were heard today on the pro side in terms of the number of people who are arrested in the state? And what is the cost of law enforcement between you and municipal governments at this point?
Well, Lieutenant Governor, I really can't vouch for the numbers on either side of this initiative. But I think, as you said early on, that the cost estimates that you're making available to the people there from the state agencies do not include those of the municipal or borough agencies, which I believe the Association of Chiefs of Police addressed.
While I have you there, let's talk about the black market for a second. How would Major Casanovas, how would you describe the structure of the black market today, and how would your law enforcement effort change if all of a sudden this product is legal and sold in stores? You would be probably more going after bootleggers as you do today, or tax evaders as you do today. Is that correct?
We certainly believe that law enforcement will still play a critical role in trying to vet out information that the public brings to us. So when we field calls that said that there is a marijuana grow operation, that there's a marijuana manufacturing operation, that there's a marijuana testing facility, or that there's a marijuana retail facility, all four of those are, if this initiative passes, going to require some permit process and legalization, we're still going to have to ferret out that information to determine whether or not they are, in fact, licensed facilities or not. And then as far as the transfer to folks, again, is that occurring from a licensed retail facility to a person age 21 or older? And then are those people taking it to areas or setting up these outlets in places that communities have voted against? Those are all the things law enforcement is still going to have to respond to and evaluate to determine whether or not any criminal offense has occurred, sir.
And then what if is there a way, and I ask this because I know this, and I'm going to ask the sponsors and the opponents to speak up on this question as well, and if you don't mind me asking this on your time here. If somebody is growing today illegally, what does it take for them to become legitimate under the law, and are they still liable for past breaches of law? And what is the state's law enforcement strategy going to be there if this passes?
Well, Lieutenant Governor, I think that the answer to that is going to hinge on the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and the Department of Law as the regulations are developed as to who's going to be authorized to become a legitimate licensed facility for growing, for manufacturing, for testing, and for retail outlets, and whether there's going to be excluding factors if they have prior criminal histories or prior contact with law enforcement for illegal drug distribution. So it would be a bit presumptuous of me to be able to say how law enforcement was going to handle that just yet, sir.
Okay. That's an interesting point. We hadn't heard that before, that the ABC board or the Marijuana Control Board might look at a past record before they legitimize a cell. I don't have any more questions of you. Do you have any other questions of the experts, sir?
No.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you
for your testimony. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify? Please come forward.
Thank you for the opportunity to do this. Hello, my name is Benjamin James Wilcox. I am married, a father of a 12-year-old daughter, and I have made Juneau my home since 1995. And for the majority of that time, I have served this community a mood-altering substance, alcohol. I have had the pleasure of serving a very wide swath of Juneau's population, from the bottom-of-the-barrel bar to Juneau's busiest nightclubs to some of the finest establishments. I have worked events for three governors, the Shriners, JPD award dinners, jazz and classics, cancer fundraisers, countless other charitable events, weddings, and many other prestigious functions. In other words, I am a state-licensed drug dealer. Yes, alcohol is a drug, and for 20 years, this community has trusted me to serve that intoxicating substance to its citizens in a regulated and responsible manner. Myself and the majority of the people that I have worked with take pride, sorry, I'm also not good at public speaking, in our work and upholding the laws. No one I know in this industry has ever served a minor intentionally, nor have I ever worked for any owner or manager, and I've worked for quite a few, that has ever encouraged sales to minors. These are the people who assure compliance to state laws and assure that everything is done to keep this substance out of the hand of minors. Will minors acquire alcohol? Of course. They can steal it. They can find older kids or relatives to purchase it for them, or even use forged documents. Now, with marijuana, you have no laws, no safeguards, no gatekeepers that are trained or required to keep this out of the hands of minors. In what reality does that make any sense? Would it be better to let anyone who chooses sell alcohol to anyone they choose? I don't believe so, and I think the majority of those around us would agree. So why does it make sense to continue forcing marijuana into the black market where anyone can purchase it without ID and quite frequently have access to a plethora of other much more dangerous and addicting substances? Why keep causing responsible adults to hide in the shadows, face criminal charges, loss of property, forced rehab, probation, loss of their jobs, or even their children. All because the opposition avoids, all of these are consequences the opposition avoids when trying to downplay the number of Alaskans that are physically incarcerated. Why should we continue to turn well over 100,000 Alaskans into criminals? Because we are afraid that a minor might get their hands on some cannabis. Well, they already are, with no oversight, no quality or safety controls, with no restrictions on what that person will sell them. With this law in place, it will be harder for minors to acquire marijuana, guaranteed. Why can I guarantee that? Because people like me and the others in this adult substance industry take pride in following and upholding the law. The opposition has repeatedly throughout a lot of these meetings asked you to Google shatter, crumble, oil, all of these concentrates that they talk about, which is no different than having a beer or a shot. Alcohol is a concentrate. Okay? I urge you to Google Mexican drug cartels. Which one seems to be a greater threat to your children? Then look around. Who would you rather have in charge of this industry? Locals from your community? Members of this industry that are already making sure that your minors do not get this substance, who have a stake in the well-being of Alaska, or the cartels? Who do you think is going to keep you safer?
Thank you. Mr. Wilcox, thank you. I have a question for you. When you are a bartender,
yes, sir.
I assume you've gone through the training to make sure that you're not over-serving or serving someone who's had too much to drink. How would that work with marijuana in your view? First off, a dispensary, you know, public consumption is not expected or allowed under this proposed law. But what is the appropriate dose for THC? How much is too much?
That depends on the person. It goes similar to alcohol. Body weight, tolerance, age, experience, all of those things come into play. And when you're making the reference between a bar and a retail establishment, I think a closer one would be a liquor store. Yes, that liquor store goes through the same process of carding, IDing, making sure that that person is of age,
okay,
making sure that person is not already intoxicated. Do they have to follow them home and figure out how much they consume? Do they have to tell them that, you know, do they have to find out, is this for use tonight or is this for use for the next 6 months? You have people out of, you know, other communities that might not enact retail establishments. You know, how many of those people come to Juneau and buy 250 rolls of toilet paper so they don't have to come back or pay $5 a roll or $5 a pack more? They want to have their, you know, their substitute for a beverage at their house. They don't want to have to go to the black market. That seems like responsible adult use to me. You know, a liquor store, if they see a bunch of kids hanging outside chatting with a guy and he comes in, most likely they will refuse that adult the sale because they will assume or feel that that is going to go to a minor. They have that right. As alcohol servers in any capacity, we have the right to refuse service to anyone. You know, in my career, I've refused service to a number of people. You know, I've worked in places where there's crossovers, restaurants and bars in the same place. If I feel that person's coming and ordering drinks and taking them to a table that might have minors at it, I ask for ID for everybody at that table or I refuse them that quantity of alcohol. You know, same with the liquor store. They see those kids, or they see a 21-year-old come in four or five times buying multiple, you know, large quantities of alcohol. They can refuse them service if they feel that is going to, say, an underage party. You know, if you feel this person has been back in your store five times buying an ounce of weed, well, he might be shuffling it to the black market. You can refuse him service. And if you have the same faith in the people that have been serving alcohol to this state, this town, for, you know, a lot longer than I have,
sure,
those same people will be going into this industry. Those same type of people will be operating. I don't want every kid in town to have access, but right now they do. I have no control of that. Nobody has any control over that except people that are driven purely by profit, not by any sense of responsibility. And when you go into those places, what if that guy has another substance that he makes a higher profit margin on? Well, you're only spending $50 a week on weed. If I get you on this heroin, you might spend $200. There's no barrier to that. I mean, how many times has anybody gone into a bar and the bar is sitting there and has three or four different other drugs behind the bar? It doesn't happen.
they sell alcohol in a responsible, regulated manner to people who choose to consume alcohol. That's what we do. And we try our best in every way to make sure that that effect on the community outside of our establishment is minimal. I do not let people drink and drive. I have put people on a dolly and wheeled them to a cab. I do everything. I mean, I've threatened them with duct tape. I've taken keys. People in this industry are responsible. And those same type of people are going to be the ones that go into this type of industry because it is a service industry. And that's what we believe in.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for any of the experts online?
I have way too many questions for the time allotted today. So I will leave that for a future date and as these proceed.
Okay. I do have one question for the Department of Commerce that oversees the ABC board. We've just kind of heard a litany of some of the safeguards in place for the sale of alcohol. Do you have a template at this point of what you would do with the sale of marijuana in terms of, I know with alcohol there's certain proof, limits on booze that's allowed. Is there some sort of a standard, a health standard, so forth in terms of the toxicity or the dose that they would be allowed in the sale? And let me ask the Department of Commerce first, and then you, Mr. Wilcox, is the witness. Go ahead.
This is Michaela Fowler from the Department of Commerce. And answer to that at this point is no. You know, any sort of details like that would be worked out through the regulations process after the vote on the bill.
Okay. Mr. Wilcox.
Federal law states that no alcohol can be sold that's over 151 proof. And, that it puts it at roughly 76.5%, where if you get a normal beer at 3 to 5%, again, we're looking at a highly concentrated.
Sure. Has Colorado enacted any sort of dosage limits on what's available for sale that you're aware?
They have, there's requirements as far as the labeling with what a dose would be. But, for instance, one cookie might actually contain, 7 or 8 or 9 doses. So I'm not sure what that limit is, though.
One bottle of alcohol contains 28 doses.
Got it. Thank you. Another clarifying question here. I mentioned in our presentation that a bill becomes effective 90 days after certification. And this is to the sponsor, to Chris Rempert here. Your bill on Section 1738.090 says not later than 9 months after the effective date of this act. So do you foresee any legal sale of marijuana before 1 year after this act passes? When would the sale be allowed, or is it 9 months, up to 9 months to write the regulations, 3 months before the bill becomes effective to do that? So when would the sale or legal possession take place?
Well, legal possession, as it sounds like you were inferring there, legal possession would be law as soon as the results are certified. So about however long that usually takes, 30 to 90 days to certify the results of the election. The stores wouldn't be up and running until up to a year, if not slightly later than that. After the nine-month rulemaking process, I'm fairly certain that the initiative sets out, I think, 45 days before they allow the applications to be submitted, and then it can take a couple more months before they actually start sending out licenses.
So in other words, depending on – all right, so the initiative itself becomes effect 45 days – or I'm sorry, 90 days after I certify the election, all right? So we would certify the election probably mid-November, so December, January, mid-February. You're saying that as of mid-February, it would be legal to to have marijuana outside your home, not to consume it in public, to give it to another person, but not for remuneration, have product, to make product, to make concentrates, but no regulation until no regulation or sale until the ABC board does its work, which would begin presumably 90 days after it was certified, perhaps a little bit earlier, and then they have a process of going, you know, when they license a dispensary, they also consult with the local community and that sort of thing. So you would have essentially an unregulated use of the drug for about a year before it becomes regulated. Is that how you see it happening?
I guess I don't see it as unregulated. You know, the regulation is already in the initiative text that it would be legal for someone to possess up to an ounce and on their person and grow up to 6 plants. That would be legal as soon as the initiative is takes effect.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. Thank you. Any other questions?
So, Lieutenant Governor, this is Christina. Can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
Okay.
Is this of the previous witness or of the law enforcement and Department of Commerce folks?
We had a medical witness that was going to be online. He had to leave. Dr. George Stewart was going to be online, but he had mentioned that the state might possibly have the state's chief medical officer online to answer any health questions. Is that true?
Yeah, Dr. Herbert, you're online.
Yes, sir, Lieutenant Governor, I am.
Okay.
Christina, let me ask. We have a witness here in the hearing room. Let me get through the witnesses who've come to testify, and then we will allow those questions.
Great. Okay. Thank you. It's kind of related to all of that, but I can come back to it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Wilson, and I live here in Juneau. And I came to this hearing because I am undecided about how I'll vote on this particular issue. I've heard the pros and the cons. I've read or scanned, I think would be a better word, the information about the cost. In my experience, any budget is wrong. They're always off, and that's just a fact of life. No one can predict the future. But one of the things that concerns me is that there was no disclosure about possible cost savings because of this initiative. The information from the Department of Public Safety includes phrases like may decrease, likely increase, quibbly words, but very appropriate when we're talking about a budget. But the question that I have is what are the likely, most likely, possible cost decreases because of decreased costs in processing, quote, criminals, unquote, who would no longer be criminals if this initiative passes? So I guess I'm addressing this question to Mr. Casanovas from the Alaska State Troopers in terms of what are the projected decreased costs in processing and handling persons using marijuana under this initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Please stay here. I'd also suggest that your question might be appropriate to the people on the person on from the Department of Corrections. But Major Casanovas, would you like to take a field this question?
Yes, Lieutenant Governor. As I have mentioned at one prior hearing, there is the probability that the Alaska State Troopers will have a cost reduction as it deals with encountering motorists and people who are 21 years of age who have possession of marijuana, and if this initiative passes, that possession may then be legal where they are and in what they're doing. That eliminates the troopers having to seize the item, test it, and or store it as evidence, and or send it to the crime laboratory and prepare a police report and submit charging documents to the court system and through the Department of Law. So, yes, there may, in fact, be a reduction in that arena.
Thank So today, you know, the number that was given, Major, is that approximately 2,000 arrests a year for marijuana possession in the state. And almost none of them, I would imagine, are in people's homes unless they are over the limit established by the Raven decision. So, I mean, I'm thinking I was at a governor's picnic in Anchorage when a young man who's right now under indictment or, you know, being prosecuted for this was picked up by a trooper at a public park charged with dealing because he had because he had marijuana in his possession and there was some known dealing taking place at that park. So you might not be arresting that person if he had less than an ounce on his person. Is that that's the savings there?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. While we have the Department of Corrections on, is there any would you have anything to add there?
No, the Department of Corrections, the majority of the offenders that are incarcerated have additional charges, so they have a tremendous amount of plant growth or some other type of issues. And so the marijuana charge is one of the lesser that they're incarcerated for.
Let me ask a question of Mr. Casanovas and or Major Casanovas and the Department of Commerce kind of along this line. Today, do we have any kind of a problem with a black market in tobacco?
This is Major Casanovas. There are occasionally reports of tobacco being sold, avoiding the state tax, but those are not very frequent reports that at least the Alaska State Troopers have fielded or been involved with. So I'll defer to DCCED if they have additional.
Or revenue.
Or revenue, sir.
Brandon, do we have tax evaders in the tobacco business here in the state that we is a regular problem?
We do. We have tax non-filers that are supposed to file a tax return that don't. We have our biggest issue with tobacco is related more to unstamped cigarettes or we call it OTP, other tobacco products that potentially were purchased online that are being sold in retail stores.
Okay. And you call that unstamped cigarettes?
Yes. A lot of the time it's a stamp that's only partially on. Let's say that 50% of the stamp was worn off. We would call that an unstamped cigarette and would confiscate it.
Okay. So I guess what I'm getting at here is would you see it as possible or likely or appropriate with marijuana products to require a tax stamp on a marijuana product so that you could tell whether it was black market or not black market, so that you know, so that you could fight tax evasion?
I think it would be a very good idea to have some way, some method to identify what's been taxed and what hasn't. A stamp would be very difficult. It works very well for cigarettes because they're all the same size package and they're all sent to us from manufacturers that are regulated and all have the same size packages. They have machines that stamp them either here in the state or some are stamped outside of the state and sent in pre-stamped. That would be very difficult, I think, for the way the initiative is written with the product being grown here. There's nothing about how it's packaged. That could potentially be regulated, but that would be my main question is how would we be able to identify taxed product? So if we find a product in a retail store, we send in an investigator, like we would for tobacco, we'd send an investigator, he would do an investigation and determine what's been taxed, what hasn't. For other tobacco products, non-cigarette tobacco products, we generally go off of invoices. So I assume we would do something similar here, but it would be much easier if there was an identifying mark on a package.
And Major Casanovas, can you think of something that you might require under these regulations to make it easier for a trooper encountering somebody with marijuana in his car to know whether or not that marijuana was procured legally or not?
Yes, Lieutenant Governor, I think that that does present a significant challenge for a law enforcement officer to know if that green vegetable material, whether or not that concentrate in some form of liquid or wax-type form, or as it's even placed into consumables, edibles, into the brownies, the cookies, the lollipops, whatever it is allowed to happen, for a law enforcement officer to be able to know whether or not that had, at one point or another, gone through the legal taxation process.
So I ask these questions kind of in addition to yours, Wilson, because I can see on Section 17 a number of ways that by regulation you can apply certain safeguards here, but as we prepared the cost estimate, and I was pretty, you know, aggressive on trying to find savings as well as new costs here, just to be able to present the right picture to the public. It's hard to know exactly what everything is speculative until you see the regulations in place and so forth. So you can have a situation where the way a person is arrested and processed today goes away, but it may be just the same because of the black market issue. In other words, you may not be just pursuing people for, you know, having drugs on their possession, but looking at it as if it's bootlegging at this point. So that's why we did not see much in the way of savings until we saw the experience.
Okay, thank you. All of you have answered my questions well. I was basically more concerned with the cost of incarceration than anything else. And the woman who answered and stated that most of the persons who are incarcerated have other charges against them has addressed my concerns. So thank you all for your time and for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here in the room who would like to testify? Sir, please come forward.
My name is Kevin Higgins. I am an attorney here in Juneau. And first of all, I, as all people should, I believe, need to give thanks to God that we're here and we're debating issues like this. In a world where there are many, many problems, it's nice to be debating these things in a civil fashion. One of the most striking things that I heard today was the disagreement between the pro and con side or anti side about child edibles. And I'm looking at proposed 1738090, and I guess my question would go to, I guess we call them experts, as to why the rulemaking authority in this section does not allow the regulatory body to prohibit the marketing of these things to children in the way that the Big Mistake campaign has kind of, you know, won't somebody think of the children approach to opposing this. So if somebody could answer how these things don't satisfy that, I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Rampert, would you like to answer that question? And for those of you who are listening, the section of the bill 17.38.90 basically says that not later than 9 months after the act becomes effective, the board, which is the ABC board, unless there's a marijuana control board created by the legislature, in the meantime, shall adopt regulations. And one of the regulations that should be included is requirements to prevent the sale or diversion of marijuana and marijuana products to persons under the age of 21, reasonable restrictions on the advertising and display of marijuana and marijuana products. But conceivably, I think if I understand your question, conceivably the board could be as liberal as they wanted to be and say, yes, you can have those lollipops, or no, we're not going to allow display of products that look like lollipops or look like something that is a benign,
correct,
or a more benign product that,
right,
there. And so would you like to, and Chris, in your campaign's slideshow, which I've now seen three times, you talk about an advertising ban and ban of certain kinds of products to minors. What you're saying, as I understand it, is you're not promising that ban will take place. You're saying that you've written a law that could allow it to take place. And the lawyer here, our witness, is asking whether the plain language would actually allow that.
Sure, yeah. Well, I do think Mr. Higgins was asking if any of the other experts from the departments around the state had any answers to that, but I'm certainly willing to throw out my response. The initiative was written in a way that would allow the regulatory board to have broad authority over the, you know, just like you said, the requirements to prevent sale or diversion of marijuana to persons under the age of 21, health and safety regulations, reasonable restrictions on the advertising and display of marijuana and marijuana products. So the authority there is defined pretty broadly, and so it would leave that up to the regulatory board to decide what is and is not acceptable in the new marijuana industry. So, I do believe that it would allow them to completely ban any child-friendly edibles and to put reasonable restrictions on advertising, such as any advertising outside of an establishment and things of that nature. So, yeah, it does give them pretty broad authority, and the regulatory board would be able to say what is and is not acceptable.
Let me ask the Department of Commerce people online, Michaela or Jean, do you see this as empowering you to outlaw lollipops or to outlaw brownies or outlaw cookies or anything that children normally consume?
We certainly see that's the intent of the language as it's written. How that would be interpreted would really be something we would need to work with Department of Law on, and we can't comment on.
Well, you say that with the intent, and I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. There's labeling requirements. There's health and safety regulations and standards for the manufacture and cultivation. And there's reasonable restrictions on advertising and display. Where does that tell me you can't sell a brownie?
I'm looking for the – in the stack of documents, looking for the right. But, I mean, the intent is just that you would have some restriction authority over over products that would be marketed toward children. And what that would look like down the line is what we really can't comment on. I do understand, as the gentleman who's speaking on behalf of the pro argument said, that intent was to give the authority to restrict sale of products that would appeal to children. But we just don't know what that would look like in the legal framework.
Another, I guess I should say that I'm pretty unabashedly pro-marijuana. And one of the things that I think is important for people to go forward is that, you know, because of this country's policies and attitudes towards marijuana, there's really just not much that's been known. It's only recently that the federal government has started easing restrictions to allow marijuana to be tested and to allow these kind of studies to happen. But some of the studies that we do have include one that was recently released on August 18th, 2014, that found that as couples use marijuana, their intimate partner violence, there's a direct inverse correlation. So essentially the couples that smoke together stay together and treat each other with greater respect. And it's my hope that the governor will look at that at least as he formulates whether he's going to do anything to prepare for this as a way that he can choose respect and help others in Alaska to choose respect as well. As a criminal defense attorney, you know, one of the greatest things that I get the chance to do is to argue about what Raven means. I had a case recently where, well, I probably shouldn't get into specifics of the case, but essentially the prosecutor was at the sentencing where we had an agreement and saying, look, you can't really follow Raven without nearly committing a felony personal grow operation. And so without, you know, assuming that I want to have marijuana in my home, I either have to ask somebody else to commit a crime by possessing it outside of their home and delivering it to my home, which is a felony, or I have to grow it within my home. And as best as I can tell, looking at Raven and Raven's progeny, especially Crocker, we're talking about 24 plants that I can grow in my home as long as it's under 4 ounces, because that's what personal use kind of has been defined as. And it seems like when you're implementing the proposed statutes that would flow from this ballot initiative, you're actually stating that, no, it would be closer to 6 plants, which, you know, quite frankly makes a lot more sense if we're talking about what it means to have personal use. So I think that there you might see some cost savings when I'm not in there tying up the DA's office over some weed with, you know, motions that I love writing with the great rhetorical flourishes that you can borrow from Chief Justice Rabinowitz. So I think that there are some hidden cost savings that people may not have considered. Also note that
just a question there. Are you saying that Raven right now limits you to 4 plants and this would expand it to 6?
No, I'm sorry. My personal, if I was at home just everyday citizen reading of Raven, is that it's personal use. And since then, we've pretty much talked about 4 ounces or 25 plants, where once you hit those thresholds, you're entering into the realm of evidence indicative and intent to distribute,
okay,
which is where people get in trouble.
So 6 plants ratchets it down from 25 plants.
Right, and so I think that we ought to keep our eye on that, not as a potential area of conflict between Supreme Court precedent and the statutes that the legislature would be enacting, but finally, statutes that would state clearly what possession is, instead of the ACLU case that came before Judge Collins, I believe, and made its way through in 2006 or so, where it was just dealing with the outright ban. So I think that to the extent that we can have some sort of legislative statutory clarity, we'd be doing law enforcement itself a favor by, you know, search warrants wouldn't have to meet certain requirements. I know that there was recently a case in Juneau where somebody was growing plants, but the search warrant was devoid of any specificity as to the number of plants that were being grown. And the search warrant got tossed in that case, and the plants that were seized were suppressed, and those charges went away. Another study I wanted to briefly mention was that in places where medical marijuana has been in place, there has recently been findings that the deaths from prescription overdose have gone down. As a criminal defense attorney, as well as a family member of a person who is addicted to prescription drugs and also heroin, because it's a cheaper form of prescription drugs now, that's a scourge. That's a scourge that people are getting rich on. I went to Purdue University. We know about Eli Lilly really well. Purdue University invented OxyContin. It's one of the saddest things to see how prescription drugs tear apart families, not only from the crime that's associated with them, but just the health cost that goes with it. And I'm not suggesting that we're going to solve that problem by legalizing marijuana. That's stupid. Dumb idea, but it is an observation to make that if you can help curb prescription drug abuse. If you can give people a different outlet, then I think we're doing ourselves a favor in addition to the other benefits that I've mentioned. Just briefly, I'd like to change my practice. I'm one of those people who's hoping for a job out of this. I think that there is a lot of good that can be done by people simply advising how to do this the right way. And I think it's important that we not look so much to Colorado because our system, quite frankly, more resembles Washington. Washington is taking a heavy data analysis approach to this. I think Alaska would be wise to do the same. In Colorado, you had to be a medical operator to be licensed initially. In Washington, they didn't have the system in place for distribution of medical, like it's similar to Alaska. So I think, although everybody's hot to try and talk about Colorado, I think we'd be doing ourselves a favor if we actually learned from the lessons that Washington has, which is really easy to do, too, because if you Google I-502 in Washington, you will find vast data and the vast evolution of their regulations. It's not going to be the wild, wild west that some people think. Like I said, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. I know some of my clients stand to lose money if it's legalized. I know that I hope to gain new clients who will make money as well. So thank you, and as I said, I give all glory to God.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify? Sir, and then I'll invite you next.
Good afternoon. My name is David McGivney, and I'm kind of mixed in regards to both sides and kind of hearing the back and forth. I definitely have a lot of friends. I own a lot of businesses in town with my wife, and we're in the business of selling alcohol. So for me to come up here, it's kind of hard because I listen to both sides. I have a lot of friends that smoke weed. I personally don't smoke weed. Once in a great full moon, I'll try a cookie, say. And that actually happened when I went to Amsterdam. I usually have nervousness. I kind of get shaky, overwhelmed, anxiety. I was told to do it. Try a little bite, see how it goes. And sure enough, it made me calm. I'm a little nervous right now because it's tough to listen to both sides, and obviously, I was told about this quite recently, of this happening today. My wife's a former resident of Colorado and Washington. We kind of heard that some of the ballot measures over there and in Washington. I think if Alaska kind of picks from both sides because it's new, so there's going to be the plus and the pros and the cons, and so we're working about it. And the fact of addiction, an addict. Black market's always there regardless of whether it's weed, alcohol, cigarettes, heroin, whatever it is, you're going to get it. Unfortunately, a lot of my employees are actually smokers, but I've never had them miss a day of work because they were too stoned out of mind the night before. But I do have a lot of call-ins because everybody's hungover the next day. Do I think it's going to help the community on taxes? Yeah, if it's regulated, correct. It's the same thing with having a business license with the liquor, with the ABC board. You have to go through the process of criminal history, background, money. Everybody's worried, oh, my God, it's going to open up 1,000 stores. Well, you can regulate. Same thing with the liquor license. There's only X amount each city regulated. Education. Amsterdam, when we went to the store, a coffee shop, there was ladies from 20-year-old to 70-year-old sitting with a cup of tea, smoking a joint. But when we went up, it was amazing because when I went up there with my wife and I said, they had all these selections of different things. And I said, how does this work? And they actually educate you. They tell you what quantities, what percentage each thing how you're going to make you feel what it is for. So it's all about the education behind it. Unfortunately, there is no education on liquor or cigarettes. You don't get a guidebook when you're a teenager and say, hey, the only thing you hear is it's bad for you, it's going to do this. But it doesn't tell you, hey, this is the alcohol percentage, this is what's going to happen to you. You can get, you know, liver cancer, lung cancer, whatever it is. You don't get a guideline. This, at least, if you do it as an educational thing, people understand it and the dosage. Everybody's afraid of on a high concentrate. Dose it like alcohol. Same concept. You have an X amount, 80 proof, 40 proof, 90 proof. What's X amount? If you kind of go by on that base, I think it would be a lot better to understand. Unfortunately, no politicians can't take sides. Some are pro, some are for, but they can't do it because they can't say what they feel. But at the end of the day, they're still human beings. At the end of the day, they still do things inside them. But the major best in front of the public. I think my concern is this is going to eventually happen. I think people are kind of bickering back and forth. I think my concern is coming up with the laws that are, nobody's really kind of focusing on the law. I think some people are taking it seriously and some people are not. And the responsibility, responsible taxing. Everybody talks about taxing, how to make different ways of getting money from it. If you responsibly tax it, like cigarettes or alcohol, whatnot, and there's a standard, at least you kind of know that what kind of way you encourage that black market. If you put it at a price that, like anything else, it's affordable to everybody, then you're going to not have people, because I have never heard of somebody going and robbing somebody because they want to go buy weed. So and I've been in the business 30 years, and I've worked from the underground to the above ground when it comes to the bar scenes and everything else, and I've seen a lot of things happen throughout my career. You know, one of the things my wife said, you know, they were talking about, it's the same thing, if you get pulled over, you don't know where that weed came from, whether it's a black market or not. Database, you know, if each person that is allowed to be a grower or whatnot, it's the same thing how you said about the stamp or whatnot, to have a growing plant with a serial number. Put that database and figure out how from there, you know what I mean, track each plant and from what grower so it comes back. It's kind of hard. It's the same thing if I grab the Captain and Coke and I'm driving down the street and I get pulled over. I might have made that, you know, I might have a little brewery in the back or moonshine. If somebody makes moonshine in the background, you can't tell. They're not going to find out either way where it came from. At least there is some idea for it. So, I mean, when it comes to law enforcement on handling, yeah. I personally would probably do it as if I get pulled over, obviously it would be the same thing as drinking and driving. You know what I mean? Same concept. But, yeah, is there a lot of money being wasted? I think for small petty crimes on the aspect of weed getting pulled over and stuff, yeah, I think there's a lot huger things that law enforcement can be dealing with instead of minute problems.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Do you have any questions for any of the experts?
Nah, not really. I mean, you know, they say, you know, with the medical part, you know, they were saying one of the things is that, you know, how it affects the minors. I was a minor when I started smoking cigarettes, drinking, whatnot. Nobody told me those things. I'm still smoking. And I still do drink. I'm not an everyday drinker. But, you know, one of the things, my father just passed away. He died from stomach cancer. He was an alcoholic. He didn't start drinking until he was 27 years old. So what does it make a difference? So some people, it's genetically, some people just don't know their limits. So, but it's all data at the end of the day, and genes, you know what I mean? I've known people that smoked for 60 years and not had one thing wrong with them. And you had the guy that just smoked couple of cigarettes and all of a sudden he's got lung, you know, throat cancer. How do you, you know, do that in a database?
David, thank you.
Yep,
thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Sir.
First of all, thank you for hearing our testimonies. I'm insanely nervous to be here right now, actually.
Yeah, well, one, don't be nervous, and two, tell us your name.
My name is Bradley Johnson. The reason I'm nervous is I am a casual smoker. And I'm openly admitting that in front of everyone right here right now.
Okay.
It's a scary thought. But I hope that I can contribute to this. I'm not sure how much I can contribute more than already that has been contributed, but I hope that I can at least offer something more. I believe people have addictive personalities. I believe there's nothing that we could really do to stop that. We can definitely try to help it as much as we possibly can. We can try to prevent it as much as we can, but the fact of the matter is that people have addictive personalities. Now, my aunt, a lot of people kind of bring up Colorado, Washington. They're all just kind of stories that we've heard. I find it better to kind of bring up something more personal to Alaskans here, which is that we have a problem with alcoholism, a huge problem with alcohol. My aunt just recently died last year from drinking too much. But the thing is, she's a law-abiding citizen. She followed the law through and through. She sat at home, just drank. The law says you can buy as much alcohol as you possibly want to, and there's no consequences. I believe the message that we're sending out, just recently there was an article about Alaska Support Industry Alliance saying that if you make good decisions, you'll get good jobs. Or they said they don't want to hire people who smoke marijuana. I believe the message that they're saying, obviously, is, we can't hire you if you smoke marijuana. That's the obvious big message that they're sending. But I believe that someone with an addictive personality will hear is, okay, I can't use hard drugs. So their minds go straight to, okay, well, how can I get around that? First of all, they'll drink alcohol. I believe that is one of the biggest problems that we have in Alaska today is that message that we're sending out is that you're going to be under the influence of something. You have to be under the influence of alcohol. There's no other options. And speaking of message sending, how many of you have watched the Super Bowl in the last year? Yes. How many beer commercials were in that commercial? I mean, during that time, there's a huge amount, and that's the message that we're sending to children right now. And the message is very clear. If you're going to be under the influence of something, it better be alcohol. I made it to my 21st birthday to actually drink alcohol for the very first time because the message that I got when I was younger was that you can have alcohol, you just cannot have it until you're 21 years or older. That's the message that we're trying to send out right here, right now, with marijuana. Look, you can use it. You just have to wait until you're 21 years or older. That is the message I believe that we're sending out as opposed to, oh, it's cool now. You can use it now. It's cool. I mean, the two biggest pop stars these days are, I believe it's Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber. I mean, they openly admit smoking marijuana. And no one really wants to see kids using marijuana. I don't want to see any kids using marijuana. But the fact of the matter is, like I mentioned earlier, I was 21 years or older when I tried alcohol. The first time I tried marijuana was ninth grade of high school, and that was in Barrow, Alaska. Barrow, Alaska is the top of Alaska. It was easier for me to find because everybody was using it because it's so easy to get. Alcohol, I had no idea how to get it. Do I just ask some random homeless guy, hey, can you buy me some alcohol? I was scared of that. And last but not least, I mean, for every bad story that we hear about what marijuana did to this person or that person or this child or that child, I can show you, I could probably tell you so many more stories of someone who just sits at home and watches SpongeBob or eats a pack of Doritos. The thing is, the stories are much more glamorous, I'd say, for someone who maybe got high and left their child in a hot car or something. That is a news story that I believe will have more hits than a news story of stoner sat in front of his Xbox and played Xbox all night. You won't hear those stories because... Well, first of all, you won't hear them because we're too scared to come out. I mean, like I said earlier, I'm kind of petrified right now. People who openly admit it, I congratulate you for being, standing up for what you kind of believe in, I'd say. If you're an American citizen and you recognize that a law is unjust, I admire you for standing up for what you believe in. And lastly, I don't have a question for any of the individuals that you had mentioned earlier, because I believe it's all speculation at this point. But I want to comment towards the no on two people who had made a mention that suicide rates are high amongst people who use marijuana. And I find that insanely offensive. One, because I used to be an alcoholic and I was insanely suicidal. I believe marijuana saved my life. I believe it saved the lives of many of my friends because they were on that path of addiction to those harmful substances that can kill you. But they chose to smoke marijuana, and they're fine now. So that's all I have.
Mr. Johnson, thank you very much. Is there anyone else here in the room who'd like to testify? We've got one more here, and then we've got several online. Representative Johansson, how are you?
Lieutenant Governor Treadwell, thank you very much. My name is Kyle Johansson. I'm a resident of Ketchikan. I just checked your initiative schedule and realized I'm going to be in Wrangell at the time that you will be in Ketchikan. So this is rather unprepared, but I'd like to put a few things in front of the listening audience and the people trying to decide what to do with this ballot measure. Going back in history and looking at when marijuana was prohibited in America, if you know that story, I challenge anybody who really wants to know, watch that movie Reefer Madness without laughing about the overwhelming propaganda that was put into that movie. It's absolutely ridiculous saying that and offensive that this substance will make you do things that are in that movie. And really, that's where it started. That's where this was prohibited in the first place, with quite a big public relations movement by some companies back in that time. And I believe it was for their own profit and gain to do this. So look at that, where it all started, why this was prohibited in the first place. In my hometown of Ketchikan, we have young people who are dying because of methamphetamines and heroin. It affects families, and money that's spent on marijuana, on tracking down this substance, dealing in the court system, the public safety, the court system, everything that we spend on tracking marijuana, going after the people that the deal, the black market, all of the things that have been testified before, I would much rather have that money spent on things that kill. Meth and heroin kill people. And that leads to what I believe is a failed war on drugs nationwide. We have spent billions of dollars in the past few decades on various drugs, and I support 100%. I'd take every single penny that we spend dealing with marijuana in the courts and public safety and apply it to substances, again, that truly kill and change lives and remove people from this earth. It's horrible. Another point that I'd like to make, some folks talk about the drug testing. I can tell you right now, I can get on my phone before my time is up and order a drug testing kit. I could smoke marijuana every single day. I could go into a business, as the Alliance was referred to. We don't hire people that we don't want to hire people that take drugs. If you took a hair genetic drug test, which is the one that will find out really what you've been doing, it's extremely expensive. So what happens is you go to the urinalysis test. I can go on the Internet and find a little device, and I know personally many people that work in many different industries that do that. They have there's many different names for them. It's basically a urinator or whatever it is. It's a device that people take in with them when they do the urine test, and they fill up the urine cup and they give it to the tester, and they test free all the time. So for groups like the Alliance to say that we don't, and I understand they probably don't want to, but don't fool yourselves. There are people that pass drug tests all the time who are on this. I think that might be an issue, but the drug testing portion is a joke. The final point that I'd like to make is, you know, this substance, basically, if you believe in God like I do, this is something that is naturally occurring in nature. You don't find methamphetamines growing on trees. You don't find heroin growing on trees. Certainly, you can take it, synthesize it, produce it, do whatever you need to create that. But this was put here on Earth by our Lord and Creator, and I believe that. I don't know. It grows on trees, folks. So, I am going to support ballot measure two because I really believe that the resources that we use on this need to be applied to things that really truly kill people and hurt people in our state. That's what I've got to say. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I have no questions for the experts. They're all both very well prepared and very well paid to protect their position. But I do want to thank you for holding a very good hearing. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. It's nice to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't think there was anyone else here in the hearing room who wanted to testify, but we do have a couple of folks online who've asked. First person is Benjamin Mills in Chugiak, and he's hung up. As Michael Parker in Big Lake had asked to testify. Are they online?
Yes, I am.
Mr. and Mr. Parker.
Yes, my name is Michael Parker. I'm in Big Lake, Alaska. My son was diagnosed just a little over 10 years ago this coming spring with epilepsy. He's had brain surgery where 200 grams of his brain was removed, and he'll always take medication to control his condition. His medication is at the maximum dose right now, which unfortunately has side effects which are equivalent to a bipolar condition. He recently spent a week in jail at the Department of Corrections. They would not take any of his medications, and he had three seizures, which when he was discharged, he wasn't discharged. He was sent to the hospital, and he received a massive black eye. While in the hospital, the state did not want to press charges with this. But since he started smoking marijuana, he's had no issues with his negative behavior. Unfortunately, his medication does cause, like I said, a bipolar-type behavior. But since he started smoking, it just disappears. And he improved greatly. His lifestyle and everything right now is better than it ever has been in 10 years. I've had problems with him for the past 10 years, off and on. But since he started smoking, he hasn't had any of this. But my big concern over this is the medical marijuana card is a little too expensive for us right now, and we're still trying to get it. And he does get – he's 22, by the way. He does get his own marijuana. But my concern was from time to time, it seems like he gets what looks and maybe spice or some kind of form of marijuana. I don't think it is. And as we know, that causes seizures. And that's a great concern for me. And I would love to see a regulation or control of marijuana for somebody like him. And I'm not sure how this is going to go. But that's basically all I have to say.
Well, thank you. Mr. Parker, do you have any questions of the people online?
I don't know. I've heard everything from them. They're fine.
Okay. I guess I have one question, and this is just prompted by your testimony to the Department of Corrections. If a person comes into the department, you know, into a state corrections facility with prescriptions for an anti-seizure drug, why would you not allow that drug to be administered?
I brought him to the hospital. I mean, to the corrections. They wouldn't accept his medication. And they wouldn't give him any medication until he had a seizure a week later. And it was basically him hitting his head on a concrete floor in jail. And I was just so happy he didn't die in jail. This was just less than a year ago, this last spring, matter of fact. So there's something that has to be done with the corrections on their mentally ill patients that they receive or any patient that needs medication. For them to just ignore me and not even address his condition or his medicine was unconscionable.
Yeah, sir, that, it's not the subject of the hearing, but I just, if corrections has a simple answer on that, was there a procedure that he could have followed, April?
Currently, we do not have the staff that can validate when a what a prescription is, so therefore it has to go through our pharmacy. We don't allow an offender's personal medication to be brought into our facilities. So we do the assessments, the medical assessments, and then the appropriate prescriptions and medications are then applied. I'm unaware and unfamiliar with Mr. Parker's situation, but if he, I'm sure that we can follow up with some additional information on our processes. But I'm not prepared to speak on that.
I volunteered to have the hospital send in information. You know, if the doctor asks them anything, they wouldn't take anything.
Yeah. No, I hear this, and I had not heard this complaint before. And Mr. Parker, if you wanted to contact our office, Lieutenant Governor lt.governor@alaska.gov, I can certainly promote some correspondence with the Department of Corrections. And I can tell you, because my wife was on anti-seizure medicine for close to 2 years after she had a brain tumor. You don't want to be off that stuff, and I do understand the side effects.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, and April, thanks for answering the question.
All right, thank you.
We also have online Teresa Ohlmeyer has asked to testify. Teresa, are you still online?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Okay, I appreciate your time since I see you're over. I am calling to say no to the legalization of marijuana. This is not about alcohol. This is not about tobacco. This is not about medical marijuana use. This is about across-the-board marijuana use. I believe we can all agree that the marijuana plant contains substances that can alter the mind in unpredictable ways. Many deny that marijuana is a gateway drug. I am testifying from my own experience with family members that it is a gateway drug. If it could happen to my family, it could happen in any family. It is my opinion that legalizing marijuana will not stop illegal trafficking of drugs or people. It will not stop minors from buying and consuming. It will not create additional revenues for our state in the long run. I suggest the state of Alaska holds off on legalizing this substance until Colorado and Washington have had a chance to digest their decision of legalization, at least one or two more years. I do not want the side effects of a yes decision on my shoulders. There are those who have concerns about filling our prisons with marijuana sellers and users. I do not believe that it is currently true, at least for first, second, or maybe third offenders. And I do not believe this needs to be the case. That is why we have state and local legislators. There are lots of plants that our Lord and Creator made, and a lot of these are poison to humans. I just wanted to add that. Finally, why, after so much money has been spent to eradicate the use of tobacco products, do we turn around and encourage the use of any mind-altering drugs? The only reason I can think of is that we really do want a zombie-like citizenry that causes no trouble and who lives in their own artificial and dazed worlds, perhaps sitting at home, playing their Xbox, and eating Doritos. I wish to thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ohlmeyer. Do you have any questions for the experts online?
I don't. I have been trying to stay informed. The Juneau Empire recently put out what I thought was a very well-balanced article about what is happening in Colorado and Washington, and I do appreciate everyone's efforts.
Thank you. Our next person who's asked to testify is Andy Samoylov. If I'm pronouncing your name right, sir, are you still online?
I am. And my name is Andy Samoylov. Okay. Well, I've heard a lot of both sides of the subject about the negative effects and the positives. And any substance that alters the mind or body, whether it being alcohol, prescription medication, methamphetamines, marijuana, is detrimental. I'm not going to argue that point, but it is a person's decision whether to imbibe these substances. And alcohol, being so readily available in the state of Alaska, causes undue side effects that can be avoided if another person had another way to satisfy their urge to take a break from the stresses of day-to-day life. That is why people drink alcohol. That is why people take prescription medication. And it is a person's choice what they want or what do not want to imbibe. Now, if you regulated a substance such as marijuana, it could be safely used, safely distributed, and it could also decrease a lot of the backlog in our court system for the fact that people will imbibe anything they wish to imbibe, whether it's legal or illegal. If you've ever been to rural Alaska, such as anywhere on the Aleutians, people will find a way to imbibe these substances that will alter their mind. There's an epidemic in America where prescription medication is being taken from people's medicine cabinets, used by children, distributed in high schools, but yet that is perfectly legal as long as you have a prescription. There are many stories in the papers these days about doctors overprescribing these medications for the fact that people just want and crave these substances. So we have to address the whole issue of either it's an addiction or is it a person's choice. I am for the legalization of controlled marijuana use because I believe in the fact that a person has a right to choose this choice. We regulate it. We could also use the tax dollars for other programs, such as informing people of the negative effects of using marijuana, of using alcohol, of using prescription medication to excess. And it comes to a point where we have to make a choice. Whether we live in a police state controlling every facet of everybody's lives by controlling what we eat, what we think, what we drink. And do we want to live in a society that says that? There are countries all over the world have tackled this issue in very positive ways. They have found solutions. They found compromises. But in America, we have a prohibition of marijuana since before the 40s, I believe, is when the prohibition came about. And it comes to me the fact that is that we've tried another prohibition of alcohol, as I'll recall. That was a decade-long endeavor to limit a person's imbibement of a substance they enjoy. Where did that lead us? It led us to the repealing of that act. It led us to the formation of groups that controlled the inflow of these substances. They created a black market, as we call bootlegging, moonshine. I mean, it's a very sad state of affairs when a government tells us that, no, we cannot do this because of the so-called side effects. The person's own choice to do what they wish, whether it is imbibing trans fatty acids or whatever substances are out there. And that's all I have to say is that the regulation does not work. Prohibition does not work. It never has worked. It has shown us in the history of America that prohibition does not work. And if we keep prohibiting it, it creates a black market and that creates crime. And it's a very sensitive issue. I understand that. I understand there needs to be more insight, there needs to be more research, more study, but if this is on the ballot, we should vote yes to legalize the use of marijuana. And that is all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions for the experts online, sir?
No, I do not. I believe their opinions are as valid as my own. I'm not going to negate them. They have studied this, and so therefore I appreciate you guys' time, and I hope we all take this into account that we are Americans and we have a choice whether to use or not to use of any legal substances or any mind-altering drugs.
Okay. Right now we've got four others who've signed up to testify, and then the proponent and opponent, Christina, wanted to ask some questions of Dr. Herbert. Dr. Herbert, do you have the time to stay online when we can get to you after these other people testify?
Yes, I can, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'm next going to call Jacqueline Tupou from Juneau.
Hi, this is Jacqueline Tupou from Juneau. I'm a mother of four beautiful children and active in my community as a soccer coach and president of my PTO and doing many things in our town and community. I didn't have time to prepare remarks, but I thought this issue was important enough that I wanted to call in and say some information that I think is important. I care about Alaska and I care about our future, and I don't feel like legalizing marijuana is going to make our community safer or smarter. It doesn't help us to produce our best and brightest. There was recently an article published by Ben Stein where he talked about if he was the head of Russia or China or the head of an Islamic state that was trying to undermine America, the smartest thing that they could do was go state by state and legalize marijuana. Because as we legalize marijuana, we no longer are the best and brightest. We no longer have the will for American exceptionalism, which we pride ourselves on. And so, you know, the Chinese have a phrase that say, you know, only Americans plan for one generation. We plan for three generations. And I think it's interesting to think about if we legalize marijuana now in three generations, what does Alaska look like? Does it look the same? Does it look better? And I would contend that it would look worse. There were people that discussed before me about domestic violence and that the opposite of domestic violence was occurring when people were utilizing marijuana. But I think the opposite of love is not hate, it's apathy. And when we talk about parents and people that are responsible for caring for children, apathy and neglect is not something that we can afford. Those things can have lasting effects on those children as they grow up. And when we talk about moral relativism, once we move the line and make marijuana legal, where does it end? When we say, that's the argument a lot of people have used right now, well, alcohol is illegal and that's bad. So this is bad and we should legalize it too. My children always try to tell me that argument. Well, so-and-so did something bad, so I should be able to do something bad. And I tell them that's not.
Are you still on, Jackie? She is. We'll move on to the next, and if she calls back in, we'll let her.
Here, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. Well, just to conclude my remarks, a lot of the remarks that we've been hearing from people have discussed a lot about medicinal marijuana, and I'm a proponent of medicinal marijuana. I think it has great properties, but again, that's not what's on the ballot at this time. People have also just talked about the penalties regarding marijuana. And I've told them, if that's your concern, please contact your legislator. That would be the person responsible for enacting those penalties. If you're concerned about enforcement, talk to the executive branch and the governor. And if you're concerned about the percentage of people that are being incarcerated and that we're paying tax money for, according to the Department of Corrections, there's currently only 11 people in jail for marijuana-related crimes. And it sounds like from what they said that those are people they were trying to get off the streets anyways. So I just want to say that I don't think that we're being our best and brightest and doing the best that we can for our community by legalizing marijuana. I think it's a harmful substance that is not helping any Alaskan.
Thank you very much, Tupou. Our next person to testify is Brian Baber, if I'm pronouncing your name right, who's calling in from Oregon.
Yes, you are. Yes, you pronounced my name correctly.
Okay, Brian, go right.
Am I on the line, ready to go?
Yes, you're on the line and on the record.
All right. Well, I was calling regarding the commercial marijuana aspect of it. The biggest extradited thing of Alaska is timber and oil. Both of these things, your citizens do not particularly care for you harming the land and the wildlife. Now, marijuana, regardless of whether it is seen as a drug or not, it produces four times the paper-making pulp as timber in a year's time, also replenishing the soil. So for just that aspect of it, for you guys to keep your final frontier beautiful, I would think that you would be looking for something that you could make the same product without taking your timber down. Because you guys are the final frontier of America. If you cut down the timber, you're California. And, yeah, I mean, even if you only legalize hemp, it would be a milestone in America's achievement. Alcohol used to be illegal. Jack Daniels now makes whiskey in Tennessee, which is a dry state. That shouldn't be allowed at all, period. They should have to pack up and move. But they were moonshining there before the laws came, so they had squatter's rights. Now you could be the innovators of America. And that's all I really have to say. Besides marijuana being a gateway drug, that's really not true. You go to a drug dealer to buy drugs. Drug dealers sell more than just marijuana. And then when they're out of pot, they're going to be like, oh, you want some heroin? You want some meth? And that's how it happens. It's not because you found some plant on the side of the road and you smoked it. That's horrible to think. I mean, everybody smokes weed now. I don't see anything happening. It only took tobacco a decade for cancer to happen. People have been smoking weed since before it was outlawed. It's stupid. The America used to have cannabis as a classified as an actual medicine until 1942, which they prescribed to infants. Now, they gave it to infants back then. You think we would have heard about it by now if it had any kind of harm? For people to say that it's harmful is stupid. And alcohol is way worse, period. Now, you guys could be the new Jim Beam or Jack Daniels, and it's on your table right now. You have the chance. And for you to pass it up without even trying to commercialize it even for agriculture, just hemp, to make paper, to make clothes. It doesn't even mold when you turn it into canvas. We can't even make tarps that good, and that's made out of polyurethane. Bad for the environment.
Thank you.
That's all I really have to say.
Well, Mr. Draper, thank you very much. And just a very fast question for the proponents. Right now, commercial hemp is not allowed in the state, as I understand it. Would this bill allow commercial hemp production in the state?
I guess that's yes, it would.
Yes, it would. Okay, thank you. Mr. David Swanger in Willow is online.
Yes, I'm here.
You've got 3 minutes, sir.
Yes. I just wanted to thank everyone that's shown up to discuss this, and everyone that's been calling in also, all of everyone's point of view. And I admire everyone, I really do, for discussing this. But the one thing I think everyone's missing out on and has not been discussed with, and that is how long it's been since this has been discussed openly without repercussion. I have people, family members who are in law enforcement that for years could not, anything of this could not be discussed without fear of repercussion. And even today, it cannot be discussed in certain circles. The reason I bring this up is because in 1983, I was sitting with my father. It's hard for me to talk about this, but I was sitting in a hospital, doctor's room with the doctor, describing how he was going to be going through cancer treatment, and that even though they had the best medicine out there, there was nothing that was going to stimulate his appetite and get him to even feel halfway better after he came out of that chemo in the morning, except for marijuana. And the doctor turned to me. He said, do you think you can get your father some marijuana? And my dad turned to me then at that point, and I was like taken aback because my dad was a staunch. Definitely, you never even talked about marijuana or any other drug around our house. And here, In order for my father to stay alive, the doctor in 1982 was asking me to get him marijuana. At this point, I became a criminal. And this understanding that we have family members who are in law enforcement that could turn us in. This was like Nazi Germany. This is what it was like, and it still remains like it. And I got to make you understand that some of your callers with misinformation, and with you on the panel with misinformation of what marijuana is and what it does, goes down a bad road. You don't get the laws that are necessary to help and benefit society. You do not make a better society, in other words. So I just wanted to touch on base what the latest medical marijuana, plus I went through that with my father. I might finish that when in the morning we'd go through chemo, I would go all through that, wait for him. I'd get him back in the truck, get him back home. We'd set him up in the hospital bed in the living room. Right around 10 o'clock, Price is Right would be coming on. I'd sit there, I'd roll a joint with him. He would smoke maybe about half of that joint in absolute misery until about half of that joint maybe was smoked. And all of a sudden he'd yell out of the living room to my mom and say, "Marie, you got anything in there for us to eat? I'm hungry." And my dad would be laughing at Bob Barker, and we'd have a great time. But you got to understand, this is under a cloud of illegality. Do you understand that? That's what's scary. And then, to boot, we have a situation now that I understand, because I've done my own research, because I went through this again with my mom, the same thing here in the 90s, and then 2005 when she finally passed away. I had to do the same with her. And I don't think you understand what this means to families, how you know, illegal laws that have been on the books for so long but not recognized as being wrong, maybe, you know, and no research, really good research being done on it. Now, everyone jumps on THC as being a main ingredient in the drug. Well, I found out the research is actually wrong on that cannabinol, there's properties in there, so many different properties that benefit the body, we don't even know yet. The total research is out on that. And until that research is in, I think we should allow people to be tested, or allow the drug to be tested, and the reason why it pumps blood up into the brain, and that is the only thing. It's not a psychotropic drug. It doesn't do anything with synapses or anything. You guys are misinformed if you think that's how it affects the brain. The only effect is blood being pumped up into the brain, and that benefit is what we get by this euphoric feeling or whatever, and it's different in different people. And that's another thing, is one person can smoke a little bit of marijuana, because I've witnessed this, guaranteed I've witnessed this, a little bit of marijuana, and they'll be out of it, and another guy will smoke and go, I don't feel anything. And I do. I have a brother who's a guard.
Mr. Fonger, I thank you for your testimony. We have a three-minute limit, and we've gone
over. I'm sorry. I want to thank everyone.
Thank you, and you're welcome to submit further written testimony if you'd like. Send it to our office at lt.governor@alaska.gov. I can just tell you I'm sorry for the passage of loss of your father and your mother. Thank you for your testimony today.
Just wanted to get it in there. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you. The last person who signed up to testify is Mary Bodaroff from Chugiak. Okay, so it's a different Jackie. Okay. Jackie, what's your last name?
Hello?
Yeah, hello. Is this Jackie?
Yes, it is.
Jackie, what's your last name?
Cummings.
Jackie Cummings, you've got 3 minutes.
I just wanted to explain from a medical standpoint that I have been on pain-killing drugs for a number of years, and I'm still on them. And if everybody says it's such a great thing to help you with pain and people that have chronic pain, that should be at least medically available to us. But like here in Juneau, there's nobody here that's willing to even prescribe it. So you can't even get it if you wanted to try it. But I would certainly like to try it. I take a handful of prescription drugs every morning to deal with what I have to. And if I could do something like this medical marijuana, it would be so much simpler for us that doctors unintentionally get us hooked on these hydromorphine tablets or the OxyContin. And then we're left with the after effects. And if this doesn't do that, I would think that anybody that is on a chronic pain system would say it must be worth trying so that we don't have to take a handful of pills to conquer the side effects of taking another one. And that's all I have to say. I'm in support of legalizing marijuana.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions for the experts?
No, I just hope that they've all done their homework and that they have talked to people that are in chronic pain, whether they use it or not, and that they really look at it as a possibility of Americans not being hooked on pills.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and have a good day. Let me now just turn to Christina. You wanted to ask a question to Dr. Herbert, and let me give you the floor to do that.
Great. Thank you so much.
Christina Wilson.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's been a lot of folks talking, so some of my questions had been a while back. I would like to ask Dr. Herbert everything that I have talked about and anything in my testimony all come from legitimate, peer-reviewed, very well-established and respected research and medical facilities, and so I would never say anything that was an opinion when it comes to this subject. Looking at a National Institute of Health report and study from 2009, this is related to a couple of questions. The article says, it has been said that by regulating marijuana like alcohol, teen use will decrease, but taking into account that in 2009, more than 70% of teens 18 years and under had experienced drinking alcohol, it does not seem possible that treating marijuana as alcohol will result in less use by teens. And in the same thread, I'd like to ask Dr. Herbert, one, what are your thoughts on, you know, legalization and the studies that have shown, you know, use of the public going up or down? And then also the medical proof that if persons use marijuana, they will stop using alcohol. So those two kind of the same thread around behavior and then also, well, I guess behavior as well. So thank you.
Shall I go ahead, Lieutenant Governor Treadwell?
Yes, please, Doctor.
Yes. Thank you. Just by way of background, my name is Dr. Ward Herbert. I'm the Chief Medical Officer with the Department of Health and Social Services. And seeing this issue coming to the fore, both in our state and nationally, for about a year, a group of four of us here in the department have been keeping each other informed and sharing articles. And so I've done a lot of reading and learning about this, enhancing my learning over the past year. I'll be a little bit broad, but try to be quick. Three of the source documents that I found particularly helpful is a report from the National Institutes of Health, National Institute on Drug Abuse, a report from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which is a part of the Public Health Service, then from the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime. None of them organizations that come in with a bias. But I'll read just a very few quotes. In terms of addiction, this is from the National Institutes of Health. It's estimated 9% of people who use marijuana will become dependent on it. The number goes up to about 1 in 6 for those who start in their teens, and 25 to 50% among daily users. So if you go home and have a joint, the same as you might have a one drink of wine or alcohol, you 25 to 50% risk there. The use of the marijuana is clearly linked to deficits in tasks of executive functioning, negative effects on memory, and so on, well documented on that. There's a three-page list from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration on the adverse effects, and I won't take the time to read all of that, but about these distorted perceptions, problems driving, problems thinking, problem solving. It has been demonstrated that not only among adolescents, but we know that our brain continues to develop in young adults to the mid to the late 20s, and that users, even who wait until after 21, have an adverse effect which is anatomically demonstrable and functionally demonstrable when they use marijuana. The studies have shown over the past few years, when we've seen the increased legalization of medical marijuana, that drivers who are tested, they're actually more positive drivers with marijuana than alcohol now. In terms of what's happened in other states, both the children's hospitals in both Denver and Seattle have reported significant increases in young children coming in those states because of access to a legal product that their parents have obtained in their homes there. I'll maybe stop now because I know our time is limited, but Governor Tredwell, I can supply any or all of what I have. I don't think you want it all, but the ample documentation there. In terms of the medical use, I think we all, our heartstrings are pulled when we hear the stories of people that feel that they have been benefited, but in fact, on a evidence basis, there is not good evidence. I don't know of anyone who opposes research for potential benefits from the use of this substance, but partly because it has been categorized as a Category 1 controlled substance, it has not really been researched, and the beneficial claims are really all on an anecdotal basis at this point.
Thank you, Doctor. You made one statement there that I just didn't understand correctly. You said more positive drivers with marijuana than alcohol.
Yes. One of my articles shows that over the last few years, with the increasing acceptance, that now drivers who are stopped and have a blood level determined, that there are more drivers who are positive for marijuana than alcohol. Now, that may be in part because it lasts longer in your blood. There are reports that it can last up to a month in your blood after the use of marijuana, whereas alcohol is cleared more quickly.
Well, and that leads me to just one question I told Major Casanovas I was going to ask at the last hearing, and we didn't have time, and we're really short on time right now. We've gone over, and the question I have is, first off, right now, if a trooper pulls over a driver who's suspected of using a mind-altering substance, we have a breathalyzer test for alcohol. Do we have any sort of field test for THC level in the bloodstream? And is there any appropriate limit for use of marijuana and then driving afterwards? I mean, it's been so long since I've ever used it personally, but I guess what I'm saying is there's, you know, is there a safety level that has been determined as appropriate in other states? And if it stays in your bloodstream, even though it may not be affecting your behavior, directly, how do you test for it, and what level do you set for a driver?
There is not a field test such as a breathalyzer. You do need to check the blood, and I'll read a couple sentences here, one sentence, I guess, out of an article from the New England Journal in June of this year. In an accident culpability analysis, persons testing positive for THC, a typical minimum level of detection, 1 nanogram per milliliter, and particularly those with higher blood levels, were 3 to 7 times as likely to be responsible for motor vehicle accidents as persons who had not used drugs or alcohol before driving. So that would say a relatively small level. It wasn't exactly a clear report on that, but down to 1 nanogram per milliliter was present 3 to 7 times as much as those who had no marijuana in their blood.
That might be a level, but there's no way to test for it. Do you have a way to test for it? Let me just ask Major Casanovas if you're still online.
Lieutenant Governor, yes, I am still online. And no, law enforcement officers in Alaska, and specifically the troopers, did not have a field test for marijuana. So we, in essence, suspect folks under the influence of alcohol or drugs, ask them to perform a series of field sobriety tests. And as you well know, for alcohol, we then have a portable breath test, and then we have a level of impairment that has already been established by the legislature for alcohol. We do not have a level of impairment established for marijuana. To answer the second prong of your question, do other states have such a level? And yes, Washington and Colorado, both to my understanding, have established that 5 nanograms per milliliter would be a presumption of being under the influence of marijuana in those states. That is usually then determined from a blood test on the subject.
Maybe Lieutenant Governor, if I could just follow on then, the next sentence in the I was reading from, in comparison, the overall risk of a vehicular accident increases by a factor of almost 5 for drivers with a blood level of alcohol above 0.8, the legal limit in most states. So it's about the same at 1 nanogram and above, 3 to 7 times as much as those not using it, compared with 5 for an alcohol level, the normal in most states of 0.08.
So would it be the recommendation of the two of you that the legislature establish a number? And I'm going to just ask strictly of the sponsor, is there a way to establish that number by regulation? In other words, let me rephrase the question. Today, if I were pulled over by a trooper and given a breathalyzer test, there's a threshold that says that if I'm below alcohol in my bloodstream, I violated the law. By the way, I drove, but I'm not guilty of driving while intoxicated. If you suspected me of having marijuana in my system, and I had it even in the last month, you might find it in my bloodstream. Should there be a number established if this law passes that is set for intoxication at the time the blood test is taken? And Cassie, you can't take a blood test in the field, so it's usually an hour or two or three. I guess how do you appropriately set a standard on this if the substance stays in your bloodstream for a long time? How do you protect public safety?
This is Ward Hurlburt, and in response to the Major's comment, we've seen, as you mentioned, other states have set a limit. I think that there is a literature available. You don't have the breathalyzer test to be done in the field, but it is a blood test. And just as we've made a societal determination of 0.08 for alcohol, I believe the literature's there. My own sense would be that the 5 nanograms is kind of generous, probably kind of high. But whatever the literature would support, I think that as a state, we could look at that and determine what would be the level. That could be scientifically based, on there. If you do have a residual compound in your blood, it is impacting you.
Okay, and then I guess a question for the proposers of the bill. Do you see any way under regulation, or is this going to require subsequent legislation to set a number? Or would you propose having
I'm sorry, you're kind of cutting out here. Can you repeat?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to find in your bill if there is a, you say the public consumption is banned, but you don't address, you address health and safety regulations and standards for manufacture.
Right.
But what is your view if someone is driving? Should they be allowed to have some marijuana in their bloodstream or no marijuana in their bloodstream or a level? And can that be set by a regulation that your proposed law allows, or would that require subsequent legislation?
So I believe the sponsors of this initiative would like to see a set level that would be determined by the legislature. It does not specifically say in the regulations. But it does say in the regulations that nothing in this initiative is intended to supersede the laws related to driving under the influence of marijuana. So, essentially, driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal now. It will remain illegal after this initiative passes.
Thank you. Major Casanovas, if under state law someone has consume marijuana in their home, which is allowed under the Raven decision, what threshold do you use for driving under the influence of marijuana today?
Lieutenant Governor, there's not a threshold per se. If the person's driving behavior, if their performance on the field tests given, if in fact we have a conscious statement from the person, if we have a consent or a search warrant for a blood test, all of those factors then are provided to the Department of Law to go into consideration as to whether or not the person is prosecuted for being under the influence of drugs, any kind of drugs. And so consequently, law enforcement would like to see that there would be a level of impairment established in Alaska. It makes it right line for law enforcement, if in fact that level is scientifically supported and proved by the legislature and incorporated into the piece of legislation.
Thank you. We had one last person, Mr. Newton. You called in after the announced hours of the hearing, but if you are online, I've got 3 minutes to spare, but we do want to wind this up. We have another hearing that needs to start shortly, and if you'd like to testify, please go ahead. David Newton online. What I'm going to do now is call the hearing to a close. The next hearing on this issue will be held Thursday in Ketchikan from 1 to 3 p.m. in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly Chambers. Today, any individual listening online around the state has the right to call in, and the same telephone numbers apply. I'd like to thank the Legislative Information Office. I'd like to thank all of you who came today and patiently heard all the testimony. And I'll just say this again, we Alaskans are writing laws, and this is happening without legislative hearings. These hearings are the ones where we've gotten intent, where we've been able to at least clarify the intent of some of the sponsors on some of the issues that others have raised. And it's a place where we've had a chance to hear some of the medical issues related to any drug. What I'm going to ask is that there has been a citation of a study, Dr. Herbert. If you could provide our office with that, we'll try to put that up online. Likewise, to the proponents, if there's been a study which you've talked about in your testimony, such as the recent one on domestic violence. That issue has come up in several hearings, and we would be very happy to put that up on the site with the record of the hearing.
thank you all very much. We're going to conclude now. And for those of you who are interested in the proposition on minimum wage, we'll be having a hearing in this room on that at 4 o'clock. Thank you very much.